Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hi there, and welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again. And just remember that just because you hear certain strategies, certain opportunities with real estate or other types of investments, please don't go initiate or otherwise deploy said strategies by your lonesome. Consult with your existing advisors. Make sure you heard it correctly. Make sure it fits your unique facts and circumstances, and you'll be better served, I promise you, than if you take off on your own. If you don't have advisors that understand this content that we talk about, particularly syndications, real estate private partnership syndications, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's beaplanner.com. And look at the top right. You'll see some client forms or a link to some client forms. If you would be kind enough to fill out at least the first one on that list of four, we'll be happy to chat with you. Oh, and right next to the forms link is a link to schedule a call. So once you've submitted the form, please schedule a call, and be happy to chat with you to see how we might help you meet your objectives. Let's see. I've got assorted items I've added to this week's recent news section of our BAPlannerShow.com website, the companion site. And you'll notice there is a resources link at the top. If you'll click that, top of the next page, you'll see for the current episode, which is 202308200HOU, you'll notice there are assorted articles under that area that I use to illustrate certain points typically, or to advise on things like interest rate changes or debt structures or new transactions that are coming online. All of these help you get a good understanding of what's going on in the commercial real estate space specifically, and the markets in general. And as we usually do, I want to take some time and discuss some of these, not all of them. You'll notice the first one on the list involves a report by Fidelity that the number of 401k millionaires has gone up in the, let's see, is it the first part of this year? Let me see here. In any event, there's a lot of balances that with the uptick in the market, they've recovered to a point where the number of millionaires is on the rise. And I guess my only comments are that's a misnomer to think that they're on the rise, or I'm sorry, to think that it's really $1 million, because there's no recognition of how much of that million that all the newly minted folks, or the reminted, I guess we should say, will be paying to the IRS, their silent partner. And that's the big reason we try to get our clients to focus on Roth conversions, because it's not just the fact that the taxes are where they're at now, which, believe it or not, we're at a historical low. In many of our lifetimes, we've got the lowest tax rates we've ever had, and certainly, I guess, for some of the older folks, They were a bit higher when they were kids, but not much. And, you know, it's as if the tax rates are still on sale, is what I like to say. And I'm going to suggest to you that if you don't have your money in a vehicle that you control, your retirement money, to where you can execute some private real estate transactions, you want to get your money rolled over and get it, and if you qualify, and many people qualify that don't realize they do, especially if you live in the great state of Texas and you're married, you can control your 401 funds at your employer. And if you don't have someone to work with that knows how to do that, please give us a call or fill out our forms, excuse me, and we'll be happy to discuss details to find out if you're eligible. But it's quite a game changer for you. If you're behind on your retirement wealth, you don't have enough to make it through to your mid-80s, which is the age that the IRS thinks that most males are going to live, and most females are a bit longer. 87, 88, I believe, is the range for females. And that creates a significant longevity risk. But right there, close to that, is the tax rate risk. And the difference between you getting taxed, 20% or whatever your current bracket is versus 40, which is what the Congressional Budget Office has projected the increased rates need to be at a minimum to not run out of money at the federal deficit or federal budget level. Approximately 2029, 2030 is when it's projected that if we don't change, you know, and as one of the articles mentions here, actually it's not an article, it's a video. It's one of my two videos I added this week. And if we don't change either by raising taxes or cutting spending or a combination of both, we won't be able to pay the interest in total on the outstanding public debt. And do you think that might have a little something to do with what the price of T-bills is going to go up to, or treasury bonds? You think investors might require additional interest, which, you know, we're currently sitting at about $1 trillion a year in interest cost. What do you think that number might go up to if all of a sudden there's no guarantee, or the full faith and credit of the U.S. government means even less than it does now? Now that we've had the adjustment by Fitch, well, one of the ratings agencies, I think that promise or that paper might not be as secure as a lot of people routinely have thought. But in any event, there's still good assets to invest in. Tax rates are low with the Roth conversion planning tools still available. You can sidestep that increase in rates as you head in to retirement. So if you'd like to learn more about the steps involved and how we can do that, and how we go about mechanically undertake Roth conversions, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show today. I know the last couple of weeks we've delved into the risk factors that are a part. Well, they're a part of life in general, but they're a part of real estate investments, including your own home for the most part as well. And that's actually a good thing, because whether or not we enumerate the risks are there. All of life is a risk in a certain context. And the good, it's a bad news, good news scenario, because those risks are what allow us to discount the value that we have to pay tax on to affect the Roth conversion. It's a good thing. And if real estate does what most real estate has done historically, it goes up in value. It doesn't go down. And so theoretically, assuming the plan is executed of the partnership that you invest in, you're going to end up with a unique opportunity of being able to convert to Roth at a less of a tax cost than you would if your money was sitting in a brokerage account or a bank account at Charles Schwab, Fidelity, or Bank of America, as the case may be, where your fair market value is the value at the end of today's trading, versus when you invest in a private company endeavor, like an apartment building, you get all kinds of discounts. You can't go trade your shares on a exchange, or you can't sell them at all in most cases. You have no voting control, and that's the first of about 20 factors that the SEC has identified and requires the syndication lawyers to disclose those, or the syndicators. The lawyers are the ones that draft the disclosures. But the syndicators have to provide that to you as an investor before you give them your money. In most cases, there are few exceptions, but most people will have the benefit of those disclosures in the private placement memorandum. And I would just suggest to you, think of that as the laundry list of discounts that we can avail ourselves to when we do the conversion. In any event, I've got a couple other things on the list I wanted to mention. The federal funds rate, third article down, a 62-year historical chart that shows they've averaged, I think, typically somewhere in the 6 to 7, 7.5% range averaged. And the only reason I bring that up is that, you know, real estate loans, mortgage rates, et cetera, are all tied effectively to the federal funds rate. You're going to expect to see mortgage rates typically would be a little higher, but it's not the case, actually, if you look at the chart there. And I guess I just wanted to put this in as a reference point. We'll add this occasionally just to give you the ability to see how it's going up or down, and get some idea of how that's going to impact mortgage rates. It does appear, and it's interesting, you can look at, I've got two articles about the recent minutes of the Fed that were released regarding the last meeting, and depending on whose reporting you believe, it kind of says the same thing, but just the quick glance at the headlines, you might think, well, you know, are they talking about the same set of minutes? And effectively, I think if you drill down, what you would realize is there's going to be more rate hikes. The question is, do they go up by equal amounts? Are they reduced a bit? But inflation is still there. And again, if you look historically at the Fed funds rate, you're somewhere between 6 and 7.5% on average. And of course, as I've said many times here on the air, none of us are average. We're all normal. So it doesn't necessarily mean that's what they'll be when we're ready to go buy that next property or that home or whatever. And that interest rate is having a big impact right now. And I don't think I put an article in this week about that, but there's been others. And the interest rate has some, in some way, provided some cover for the lack of supply that continues, because you don't need supply when you have people that either, one, can't afford the mortgage at the higher rates, or two, aren't willing to. And there's a huge segment of people that might otherwise sell that realize they're going to have to go find another property, they're going to have to take out a loan, and they lose the benefit of the very low mortgage rate loan that they may have had. If I'm not mistaken, the mortgage rates actually got down into the like 2.275, 2.28, somewhere in there, and that's like an asset that ought to be valued and put on your net worth statement, right? because it's going to be a while if or when we see that. Let's see here. There were a couple others that were noteworthy, a couple other articles. Let's see. Oh, I thought this was interesting. The gentleman that predicted in large measure, or he put a big bet on the debt malaise and the fact that, you know, a lot of easy money had been put into the real estate business as well as other industries. Michael Burry, the guy that the movie The Big Short ostensibly was produced about his story, he just initiated a couple other bets that total $1.6 billion on the market crashing here fairly short term. And I don't know. I mean, the guy sure knew what he was doing on the last one of the last big hiccups in our economy. And if you enjoy reading that sort of thing, knock yourself out. That's a good article. excuse me. Oh, got some hay fever or something. Have another video on this week's list. Former CBO director Philip Swagel on the U.S. deficit talks about the challenges in really real terms. I mean, this guy for a former CBO director is pretty direct and on point. And, you know, he calls it like it is, basically. It's essentially you've got the choices of either raising taxes, cutting spending, or some combination of both. And unfortunately, there's no fortitude, no intestinal fortitude of the folks running our country that will truly cut spending. And most of them want to raise taxes, but they don't want to do it on enough people. They simply think if they attack the billionaires or the corporate taxpayers that will generate enough money to cover the bill, and it won't, at least soak in the billionaires. You could take every billionaire's billions and you wouldn't come close to balancing the budget and eliminating the deficit. And not, in fact, you wouldn't really adjust it much at all the way the current crew in Washington spends money. And they tell you all along how much we're cutting the deficit. It's just not true. And, you know, I've forgotten the current year numbers, but if I'm not mistaken, the latest estimate was recently adjusted by CBO that we've got about a $1.7 trillion deficit this year, and I don't think it was projected to be more than about a trillion. But it's just not a week ago, I heard Biden, I believe, talking about how he had cut the deficit by $1.7 trillion. And it might have been, maybe that was over the 10-year period that's coming up. These folks have a difficult time with math, and they don't understand that if it's over a 10-year period, it might as well not even happen, because like many other promises before, spending, there's always something to spend money on. And, you know, we look at how much money we spent in the recent past on things like Ukraine's defense. And what do you think's getting ready to happen in China and Taiwan area with, the Chinese are doing military drills right up next to Taiwan. Who do you think's going to be paying for that? Okay, so anyway, hey, I've run past our break. Let's go ahead and take a break. Be back in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words.
to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And before I get off the news, I wanted to point out an article that it's actually on in the last week's section on the resources tab of the BeAPlannerShow.com website that it's in the Wall Street Journal, so you'll need a login to get there, but or maybe Google this title and it'll be out there for free, maybe this late in the game. But anyway, it's let's see, I just had it here. It's where did it go? Here it is. The scary math behind the world's safest assets. And it generally speaks about the Fed's fight against inflation and how that's amplified the risk of just an unthinkable fiscal crisis that's been made possible by decades, literally decades, of Washington dysfunction. And I've got a bolded section. I lifted a quote from the article. The 10-year notes yield literally is the risk-free rate that's used to value all other securities. Think about that. It basically is saying the 10-year treasury note is the underpinnings of the entire financial apparatus of the world, maybe with the exception of Russia right now. But I would suggest even their securities in a way are contingent on the value of our 10-year treasury note. And 10-year treasury notes, a lot of things are tied to that, maybe not directly, but indirectly. And, you know, it tends to be the thing that we talk about in the real estate market in terms of debt. You know, we're all concerned and tracking and following the 10-year Treasury's current rate and where it's headed. And, you know, I've told more than a few clients when I look at transactions for them, and, you know, the yield on a 10-year Treasury is about what the cash-on-cash return is projected to be on a real estate transaction. It's like, why would we invest in a real estate transaction like that? You know, we could stay in bed in the morning, not worry about getting out of bed if we just bought the 10-year Treasury, if we had a yield similar fashion. And, of course, the answer to that question is, well, buying the right apartment building, the right asset, the right location, the right rental rates, the right upside with regard to the value add that we would seek to inject. There's upside at the exit. You know, you theoretically should sell it for more than you paid for it, plus have gotten the benefit of the cash flow. And that's the reason, even in a less than pristine market, that I would suggest you're better off with the piece of real estate. And I understand that if we have an all-out depression like we're going to have in 2029 or 30, I was thinking about the last Great Depression there. Let me tell you something. The one in 2029 or 30, if action is not taken to avert the crisis that I just mentioned, it's going to make 1929 look like a picnic. And so the folks running our country have got to pay attention. And I suggest it's a combination of cutting spending and addressing the rates. And I think there's a lot of people that know that we're paying low tax rates relative to other countries, relative to other times, and that I'm not suggesting anybody likes paying taxes, but I think there's a large segment of our population that if the extra tax payment was going to actually reduce the deficit, I could see being willing to do that. And I think other people probably feel the same way, because what's the alternative? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about how much things like Social Security, Medicare, et cetera, would have to be cut to balance the budget, or at least get the deficit down? I don't know that we'll ever balance the budget. That's wishful thinking. But, you know, getting the deficit reduced significantly to give our full faith and promise guarantee some credibility, because it doesn't have a whole lot, in my estimation, currently. Okay, let's shift gears and talk a little bit more about the risk factors that every private real estate partnership has, some or all of these. And these are not things that I just pulled out of the air. These risk factors are identified under Rule 5 of the SEC. It's the crowdfunding statute, and these are the risks that attorneys and the syndicators leading these transactions, sponsoring it, you know, the lead partner, sponsor, syndicator, whatever term you care to ascribe, they have to consider each of these risks and whether or not they apply. And if they do, they are supposed to include them in the private placement memorandum. Now, the private placement memorandum, however, is a document that may or may not be required if the transaction is undertaken as a Section 506C. And without getting too into the weeds here, there's basically the two most common crowdfunding offerings are 506B and 506C. 506C is a type that's offered only to accredited investors. And by accredited, we mean investors that either have in excess of $1 million, that's $1 million net worth, not counting the equity in their home mortgage, Or they've earned at least $200,000 if they're single or on a single basis, I should say, for the last 3 years and expect that it will continue in the current year. Or if they're married, filing joint, if they're qualifying as a couple, then $300,000 becomes the target. So a lot of our clients are accredited. We also have non-accredited, which means they have less than $1 million in net worth, and they're limited to the 506B offering. And accrediteds can still participate. In fact, an unlimited number of accrediteds can participate, but up to 35 of the non-accrediteds can also participate. And the ability for you to find 506B transactions is a little bit harder because there's no advertising allowed. Only on the 506C can there be advertising or promotion. And so typically you have to be connected before a 506B transaction is made available. And the way you would get connected is through your accountant, perhaps through a local investor mentor group. We have several in the Houston area. And when you learn about a given syndicator, you need to connect, fill out their get-to-know-you forms, is what I like to call them, so that you can qualify to have a pre-existing relationship once the private placement memorandum and other deal docs or deal documents are released. Because at that point, if you don't have that relationship, it's too late to join. And so within the private placement memorandum, there's going to be a section referred to as the risk factors, or similar language. It differs a bit from time to time, I notice. And you want to read those just to be reminded. But these, again, these same risk factors likely apply to most principal residences you've bought over your time in the real estate arena. And if you didn't do it on a principal residence, well, certainly if you bought a rental property, single family rental or small apartment building, you had these put in front of you because it's mandatory. But we've talked the last couple weeks about some of these, and I know some folks that are tuning in today may not have the benefit of those earlier discussions, and I want to make sure that we at least mention the two biggest potential risk that also have the two biggest potential discounts if you're trying to undertake a Roth conversion are the lack of marketability, meaning that when you invest in a real estate private partnership, you basically give up the right to go sell that investment on your own. It's not permitted by almost every set of documents I've ever reviewed dealing with private real estate partnership syndications. The lead partner, or maybe in certain situations, a vote of all the partners is taken, but generally speaking, the lead partner decides it's time. We're getting some informal offers. People want to buy our property. We can get a good enough price for it that I think we ought to sell it. And again, depending on whether he needs your vote or not, he or she needs your vote, that property will be transacted or not. But in most cases, if the offer is over and above pro forma expectations, they're going to sell it. That's when you get to sell, and that's when you get your money back, or at least you hope. And in most cases, I think large majority of the time, you will get your money back. The question is, how much more will you make? Because apartment buildings are almost magical in terms of the way an increasing net operating income spells an increasing sales price or refinance price at some point throughout the, or during the project. And so the lack of marketability versus you having your funds at, say, a Charles Schwab or a Fidelity, where you can literally log on, execute a sell in 5 minutes. That's the difference. When I say marketability or liquidity, that's what we're referring to. Lack of voting control. And by the way, that discount in many cases is, you know, anywhere from 20 to 60%, depending on the nature of the asset. This could be the same as maybe a gift and a charitable strategy under the code. The IRS has many cases every year where they litigate the nature of that discount, and for the most part, over the past 2 or 3 years, I've seen assorted cases that either end up being settled or are won or lost, and that discount is somewhere in that 20 to 25% range, just that discount. I think I said 60 earlier, and that would be with the other 20 or so discounts. But in any event, it's a significant discount to what you may have just invested because of the fair market value. Market meaning the amount that a willing buyer will pay a willing seller, where both parties know all the relevant information. There's no secrets. And that is the difference between fair value. It's the difference between cost basis or investment basis. Fair market value is what we seek to ascertain to undertake a Roth conversion. The second largest discount is the lack of majority voting control, to where you're not able to control the investment. And that's another fairly large discount. Typically, again, if you look at IRS cases, tax court cases, somewhere in a 20 to 25% range as well. Depends on circumstances, depends on the nature of the pro forma information that you're making to make your investment decision. Depends on whether the business plan is being executed as intended, or if maybe the supply chain issues have put current projects behind. There's a number of real-time issues. I'll give you one: the cost of insurance. Cost of insurance has wreaked havoc on the amount of net operating income that is available on a given year's results. Insurance premiums have doubled and tripled in some cases, and that is a big impact on available cash flows that would otherwise be available to make distributions, that would otherwise either maintain or increase the value, fair market value of a property. You may have risk involving being able to rent your units as you projected. In other words, a significant economic downturn could cause the inability of leasing staff to rent the units effectively and as timely as were used on the projections. You might not be able to refinance the property when you thought you were on the pro forma results. So that delay can cause a decrement in value. You may never be able to refinance it. Look at what's going on right now with the huge volume. I believe we're sitting on $1 trillion that's coming up in the next 12 months that needs to find a home, has to be refinanced. You've got tons of transactions that were structured originally on original acquisition as a three-year bridge type loan that has 2 1-year extensions at a cost, 1% per year in most cases. In other words, it's not free. It's not just the syndicator waving their hand and saying, hey, we need an extension here. No, you got to have the money to pay it. And if you didn't do a rate lock when you acquired it, so you've had, what, 10 rate adjustments, 10 clicks on the Fed funds rate since then, you probably don't have the cash reserves sitting there to even make the current debt payment. That's happened to a lot of operators. Some of them famous. You know, the only person to win the National Apartment Association independent owner category for 2 years is in that boat. And I, last I heard, that loan was going to be mediated. I'm not sure what might have been worked out, but bottom line is that partnership didn't have adequate cash flow to make 100% of its debt service. That's going to be just like our own country's debt service come 29 or 30, that's 2029 or 2030, if we don't come up with some way to either cut the federal expenditure or increase the federal collection, i.e. taxes. That's the only two choices. And, you know, you can kick a can and kick a can for a while, but when you can't get more loan proceeds because people don't feel as confident they're going to get repaid, or maybe they're going to get a percentage, it's just like the bank involved on these loans that aren't getting their full payments now. You think they want to refinance that bar? They probably don't really want to foreclose on the property, but banks have learned that they typically will get more eventually if they foreclose and control the asset versus letting a delinquent borrower control. And so so effectively, let me just look real quick going down this list and see. Okay, this particular private placement memorandum that I'm looking at has a section broken out just for value-added properties. And if you recall earlier, I mentioned that the type of properties that we want to acquire are those that have not yet been made beautiful and have market rate rents. We want to undertake the renovations, the updates, etc., to allow us to raise the rents for the area to what would be deemed a market rate of rental. And so in that case, there's a disclosure in this particular offerings memorandum. The fund may seek higher returns by acquiring underperforming and value-added properties in need of better management, repositioning, physical improvements, and other enhancements. Thus, these properties may not generate positive cash flow or may have a cash deficit and require significant cash. Let's see, there may be anticipated delays in or increases in the cost of improving or repositioning such properties, which are beyond the control of the manager. Further, there is no assurance the manager and its affiliates will be successful in improving the cash results of the properties, as this depends in a significant part on a number of factors beyond manager's control, including general or local economic conditions and demand for residential real estate and the local market. Thus, underperforming and value-added properties may pose greater risk than fully stabilized properties. And by the way, the opposite's true. The value-add properties typically have a greater possibility of returning even higher rates of return. And that's the issue with the required disclosures. I would suggest to you that you had a similar condition when you bought your residence. You had a job that you were going to be using your income flow from that job to cover your mortgage payment. Well, you could have lost your job. Would have been very similar to this scenario where there may have been a problem getting the property repositioned or renovated. You know, problems happen. And that's why lenders have all the rules they do. It's why they have reserves. And it's why they typically don't want to refinance a loan that's not current, obviously. So in any event, the risk here, I think, are risks that it's like they're waving the flag saying, hey, here's what could happen. There's nowhere near the language that says this is what normally happens. If you ever see that, well, then obviously you want to put the brakes on investing, because a lot of this stuff could happen and has happened, more importantly, but it's typically from significant more issues and what we've got even in today's economy. You know, failure to underwrite properly, failure to do due diligence that would have uncovered certain issues that would need more capital to address. There's a number of issues that I think you can look at what's going on today that's affected some of the foreclosures that we've had. You know, it's not always the way it's depicted in the paper, even if it is the Wall Street Journal, right? In any event, I tell you, well, no, I think we're fine. I was going to suggest another break. The ability for people, lay people, to understand what's in some of these documents is really well, it's beyond the scope of what most lay people are able to look at. And I know I'm going to read you a section in this same PPM to just illustrate some of the language that, let's see here, where is that? Here it is. Anticipated fees, one of my favorite, well, let's just say I don't like most of the fees that are in the current crop of large apartment transactions, but let me just read this to you real quick and you'll get a feel. Notwithstanding anything contained in Section 7E to the contrary, and we'll not worry about that, set that to the side. It is the intention of the manager, that'd be the syndicator, the sponsor, etc., to charge fees in connection with the acquisition, development, and ownership of the project, including, and by the way, that already has a lot included, just those words, development and ownership of the project, including, without limitation, a developer fee, capital transaction, financing and or loan brokerage fees, guarantee fees on any debt that they may guarantee, that's the manager or the management team, construction management fee, and disposition fee. Have we missed anything? What else happens in a real estate transaction? In other words, despite the fact that you're handing this group 20 to 30%, I've forgotten the amount of the manager's promote that they get handed on the front end, where that's their override. Despite that, they're going to charge millions of dollars in additional fees, and they don't really identify specifically how much they are. This is in an operating agreement. This is where they should be spelled out. It says any such fees shall be set forth in the in the pro forma and the operating agreement. It's an affiliate. I didn't pull that agreement. And that's part of the difficulty, is figuring out. It's like a pinball machine. You're trying to figure out all the different bumps, you know, from the top down to the bottom to figure out, okay, how does this apply to my dollars that I'm putting in? And so I guess they probably do identify those fees. But I'll promise you, once you've got those fees in front of you, get a calculator, add them up. You'll have to make some assumptions on what the property sells for, how much over budget it is on construction. And I'm telling you, on a $100,000 investment, you might have $50,000 that's actually going into the property itself, as opposed to all of these fees. And I'm telling you, a lot of you listeners would be better off investing in your own small apartment or joining with three or four other folks that you may know. We work with people on that basis. We've got basically some templates we use to try to hold the cost on setting those up. But I'm telling you, you could cut your fees dramatically. You could still engage a property manager, so you're not having to get out of bed in the morning to go run those apartments. And I'm going to be discussing more and more content as we move forward on that front, because it's frustrating seeing how the fees have gotten out of control. And you combine that with cap rates, which is the other part of the equation on how much a property's worth. First, the NOI is calculated. Then you look at what a current cap rate is that an investor or a bank is requiring to either buy your property or refinance it. And as with the interest rates, those are still moving upward, which means your property's worth less the higher those go. And so, again, the investing into the abyss here, or the unknown, I just think at some point, like myself, I've got an 8-unit apartment building in San Antonio, and I'm looking for more of those. I would prefer having the chance to make a grand slam, actually end up as a grand slam at the end of the day, versus getting converted to a single because of all the project level, i.e. the syndicator level fees that are coming out of it. And when you look at these beautiful private placement memorandums, very well done, most of them at that level, you're not going to be able to sift through as easily and figure out how much comes out to you as an investor. And so you got to ask for that. Ask, what does a $100,000 investor expect to net at the end of each year, or 12 months, 24 months, et cetera, all the way out to the end? And then you'll have enough information to actually calculate some information that'll give you a better idea of your return. Well, I've got a little bird whispering in my ear. That would be a producer telling me that we're at the end of the hour. And I hear the music starting, so I'm going to sign off, and I hope to have you join us once again next week. And we'll, next week, I believe, we'll actually discuss a couple of real live syndications that you might or might not have interest in, if you qualify. In any event, I hope you can join us next week, and we'll look forward to same time, same place.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Ooh.